Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy, but being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care, and BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com today to get 10% off your first month.
Good morning and welcome to episode 102 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name is Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host, John Shipley. How you feel about the 101 take, John? Are you still think that getting to episode 101 was better than episode 100? Or what about episode 102?
102 is leading the pack right now. I'll say that.
Just the sound of it. We've made 102 episodes. That's wild.
That is wild. Okay. But getting to 100 is definitely way better than anything else. Like, you're getting the triple digits. Yeah. It's
a 100 is better than 100. 100 is better than 102.
For sure. I remember when I was turning 10, that's like one of the like younger birthdays I remember because I was so excited. I was like, double digits, here we go. Let's
2 years ago. Of course you remember it.
Yeah, so if someone turns 100, everyone's like, oh wow, that's such a big deal. Congratulations. But then when they turn 101 or 102, people are like, they're still around. That's what people are thinking about us. They're like, oh, 100 episodes, good for Gus and John. And then now they're like, oh, they're still doing it, huh?
I think 102 is good for Gus and John. Of course you remember your 10th birthday. Get out of here. It's not the show's 10th birthday. When this show has its 10th birthday, then that'll be the day, all right?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Until the 11th birthday.
I don't know if we're going to get there. That would actually be something.
Can I put you on the spot before we actually talk about what we're supposed to talk about?
Yeah, go for it.
Put a guess on how many episodes this show has will have in its existence. Give me a number.
What's the question?
How many episodes will this show have?
Oh, like by the time we're done with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Just give me a ballpark.
I'm going to say 400.
400?
Okay. Yeah. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah?
I don't know. Right.
The countdown has begun then, huh?
Yeah. I don't want to put an expiration date on us.
Yeah, 298 episodes left. All right, that's what we're going to
do. Yeah, we can start counting backwards now. We'll go the other way.
Yeah, with that said, that is basically the epitome of May football talk. You know, here at Talk Jaguars, of course, OTAs. But, like, the perfect way – yesterday summed up OTAs perfectly, I think. One, like, I think they're absolutely valuable and – they do a ton of stuff off the field that we don't see. That's probably even more valuable. So OTAs are an important time for team building, especially young guys. But the OTA practices that like are open and media sees, and it's voluntary, you know, for a reason. And I mean, summing up yesterday, I've never seen so many like hats and bucket hats at a football practice. Like that's what OTAs. OTAs is hats, t-shirts, and shorts.
You know, like being worn by the players. John's not talking about you on the sidelines here.
Like, there's some competition, and you can carry some things over, but most things, like most of the notable Lawrence to Brian Thomas connections, for example, like they had a nice touchdown yesterday. And we'll talk about that, but most of them, the two OTAs that we've seen, there hasn't been a defender on the field. You know, it's good stuff for here's some actual content in the time you're starved. Here's your franchise quarterback thrown to the first round pick. That's obviously good content. I'm not disputing that. I've posted that. I will continue to post that. But the actual importance of it, and then what was it? You or somebody else pointed out to me in like the final team period, and like there's some position groups just shooting crap. Like talking, not the final team period, like the final individual period, because they're doing special teams and stuff, and it just sums up OTAs. Like it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, the tight ends I know specifically were just kind of like hanging out. It wasn't just them though. But yeah, I feel like
that's the tight end position.
I feel like a lot of the takeaways that I had from yesterday and from OTAs in general, usually like, this guy looks pretty good, but like I'm gonna kind of bookmark him and wait until like the pads come on to see if that continues.
I still got some takes.
All right. Well, that's all what right. We're
doing. Let's start. Okay, through two OTAs, not counting quarterbacks because I don't think it's or even like trench guys. So it takes out like half the team because I think it's kind of unfair to look at them in this setting and judge them, but. The best player through two OTAs, I think, Evan Engram.
Yeah.
Dude went crazy yesterday.
The catch of the day, too. I know that a lot of people are saying, I know Kirk had a really nice catch, but did you see the one-hander that Engram had? I mean, like, they're all against air, like, whether it's 7-on-7 versus just going versus nobody. But, Engram had a really nice catch yesterday that you could probably find on Jaguars social.
Yeah, I've had some of the worst luck in terms of getting video. I'm always watching like some other position group when like something happens. I couldn't tell you where I was tonight because when I saw the video of that, I was like, that was today. It seems like nobody got it.
I didn't even see it until later on social media. It's tough to be able to kind of have eyes everywhere, obviously.
It's tough to see everything because so many different position groups are working together. But I mean, even other than that catch, like in the actual competitive drills, like team drills and 7-on-7. And for context, contact isn't allowed by defensive backs. So you'll literally see players pull up like several times. Like there were several passes. Like I tweeted about one Lawrence deep touchdown to Thomas where it showed his speed, obviously a good throw. But if like a contact was allowed and pads were on, Andrew Wingard would have definitely made a play on it. Would have at very least contested it.
Right? It would have actually been an underthrow, but like I think it was like the underthrow is fine in that context because like it's OTAs and like I don't know. He was just trying to get a catchable out there for Brian.
That's just hanging out.
He didn't have to worry about Dewey intercepting it because it's not really the way these practices go.
It's funny when Urban was there, they actually got in trouble for too much contact during OTAs, and even then. Like when they got like in trouble for that, I thought back to their OTAs and I was like, "You sure?" It didn't seem like it, you know, to me. But yeah, but Evan Engram to me had a phenomenal play. He made like several like impressive grabs. Like you can tell even in an OTA setting, it's easy to see who Trevor is entering his third year throwing the ball to. Right? Like all of Trevor's best passes, in my opinion, that we've seen, like noteworthy, have been to Engram or Kirk. Because it's clear they're just working on a different level together than everybody else. But Engram, particularly yesterday, made like three or four different grabs and team drills where he's just catching, you know, lasers, you know, in soft spots and zones and stuff. He I thought had an incredibly impressive practice. I think he's been one of the best players. I think Kirk too. Kirk has stood out.
Yeah.
Every time we've seen him, I think even more so than he has in the past.
I agree. I was thinking the same thing about Engram. Like, I feel like I certainly don't remember him being like a nothing or a zero during past summer practices, but I feel like this summer has definitely been a little bit different. Even for Kirk, like coming off of an injury, and maybe that's why I'm a little bit more impressed this year is because I know he's coming off an injury.
Yeah.
But yeah, the two of them have definitely looked really sharp. And I think your point is a valid one that like they're the top two returning pass catchers, and obviously they have a rapport with Lawrence going back 2 years, and then like Gabe Davis and Brian Thomas are both coming off of injuries, and they're both obviously new to the team. And so with those two, we only saw Gabe Davis really working in individual drills yesterday. That was his first time out there at practices, and like he looks like he looks like he belonged, but he wasn't doing a ton of work. And then Brian Thomas is obviously a 21-year-old rookie. So, yeah, it looks a lot different when Lawrence is thrown to ETN – or not ETN, Engram or Kirk versus anybody else.
Yeah, no, I don't know if this is even a take because I'm not sure how many people would dispute it, but they're going to be the top two guys in targets, right? Like, I don't see Gabe Davis surpassing either one of those guys. I think they're going to get force-fed the ball, honestly.
Yeah, I think, like, I'm 100% expecting Kirk to lead the team in targets in most receiving categories, and then for Engram to be second, and then I'll probably say Gabe Davis third in the pecking order, but, like, if Brian Thomas – surpasses him as a rookie, I wouldn't be shocked. But I think Gabe Davis and Brian Thomas are, like, definitely going to be the third and fourth options.
It's definitely a good like, add them and ETN and, like, for, like, your top five skill players, like, yeah, maybe not, like, obviously not top five, top ten in the NFL, but they definitely have had worse, like, skill groups, right?
It might be their best skill group since they had, like, the OG Thunder and Lightning pairing of Eden McCardo and Jimmy Smith. Like,
because when they had Hearns and Robinson, they didn't have a running back.
Yeah, or really an offensive line.
They
or a quarterback. Well, I know we're talking about, like, the pieces surrounding the quarterback right now. But
yeah, don't get me started. in terms of Gabe Davis, my impressions, obviously. So from what Doug Peterson said, he was like, we're going to take it slow with him. He'll do individual drills, not team drills. And he outright said, he's like, I don't want him to get tangled up with somebody, you know, fall. We see that happen in OTAs all the time. So it seems like Gabe Davis is fine. They just don't want him to get hurt in a useless practice, which
– just fair. He's kind of had, like, two – not – I wouldn't say minor is the right word, but there weren't significant injuries either. Two injuries in the last year that – lingered a little bit, like, throughout the season, and so I feel like the Jags coaching staff is usually pretty, I don't know, cautious about injuries, but especially with Gabe Davis coming off two seasons where he's had injuries impact his years, so
it's the right way to go. I mean, my impressions of him, the very little we saw of him, was he's big for a Jaguars receiver. You know, like, he's not one of the tallest receivers in the NFL, but just seeing him with the rest of the room, it's like him, Ryan Thomas, and then Seth Williams, and then everybody else is, you know, like, 6 foot or shorter. Mm-hmm. So definitely interested to see how him and Thomas, you know, build that chemistry with Lawrence, because I feel like that's probably going to be their main emphasis of training camp, is getting those two caught up to speed in the offense, because everybody else has been in it for years and years, and they're new faces. One of my other big takeaways. Okay, you were there. I don't have any photo proof, because, like, the way they're lined up, I'll get a blurry columnist type, you know, like photo in there. Devin Lloyd looks, like, completely different, right? Like, am I crazy?
No, he does. I'm actually gonna post. I was pre-writing, like, the article I'm going to post on Big Cat, like, with this podcast, and I got this picture of Devin Lloyd looking huge on there. Don't worry. There's, like, some, like, Getty photos that I found.
I'm not crazy.
By the time the podcast comes out, I'll have the picture out, too. So, yeah.
Vindicate me.
Oh, don't worry, John. I will. I have to, because you're right. He looks so different. Like, He's definitely had the glow up of the offseason. Last year was Andre Sisco. He showed up to camp and everyone was like, wow, those muscles are popping. And now, like, this is, like, a whole different thing, though. It's not just like, oh, like, he hit the weight room. His muscles are popping. That was weird. But,
go on. You're making, like, a good point. Go on.
He looks good in, like, a cutoff tank top. Like, it's more than that for Lloyd this year. He literally looks like, just like, as you were saying, the way you put it was, he looks – like, 10 years older. And, like, the way I was thinking was that he just looks like he's playing a different position group. He looks more like a defensive end right now than a off-ball linebacker. And so, I mean, maybe part of that is because he's expected to be playing on the line and rushing passer at a slightly larger percentage this year compared to in the past. And so maybe part of it is that he felt like he had to bulk up a little bit for his role in Nielsen's defense. But I think mostly he just kind of went to work in the offseason, came out looking huge.
I mean, he's been a guy they praised without him having to be brought up before, you know, this offseason. I mean, he seems like the obvious breakout candidate on their team. this year, right? Like third year, first round pick, new system that can potentially play to his strengths. Obviously, a terrific athlete, has flashed the first 2 years. He feels like the guy who at least has the most potential and the chance to take that step. Like, yeah, am I wrong in saying that?
No, I agree. Because I was going to say, I think it's him and Walker Little that are like the only like really early round picks that haven't like turned out at least decently well for the Jaguars. And I feel like the shit might have passed on Walker Little already. Like, it feels unlikely that he's going to be on the team after 2024, which is fair because like he hasn't really been given the greatest shot. So it makes sense that he might want to take his talents elsewhere and try to start somewhere else. Because like the only time he's going to get significant playing time this year is due to injury. And maybe that happens, but I don't know. It's kind of tough to need that to happen in order to get playing time. And so again, I feel like Walker Little is a little bit of a ship sailed scenario. But then Devin Lloyd, like you said, former first round pick. And so clearly he's got a lot of talent for have been taken where he was selected. And I think that's a good call. Because I feel like I was trying to think earlier, like everyone says like, oh, tight ends face such a big learning curve going to the NFL. And like everyone and their mother says that about the tight end position.
Linebacker,
there's other positions out there too. I was thinking like linebacker might be the next toughest one to adjust to from college to the pros, especially in the past 5, maybe even 10 years with like the way that college defenses are kind of being built. Because at this point, like college linebackers are basically safety hybrids. And so like linebackers are just getting smaller and smaller, which is part of like the way the game is trending. Like, I don't know. Everyone's looking for faster and quicker and trying to cover more space on the field. But now like linebacker play has deteriorated a little bit in the NFL because of that, just because there's not really as many guys like well-equipped to truly play NFL linebacker coming out of college. And so it might've taken Lloyd a couple of years, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he was a bust or anything like that. And so I think hopefully he does end up having that breakout year, or at least kind of is pointing his trajectory in the right direction definitively.
Yeah, I mean, they already got some bang out of the buck for that pick, I think, at times. You know, he had like his first month of his rookie year, obviously had a lot of turnover production. Last year, I thought after he came back from his injury, I thought he was playing the best football of his career. You know, him and Fourier both. Like, that Saints game was like a masterclass in linebacker play from both of them. And when he started struggling late in the year, I don't even think I put that against him, because who on the defense wasn't struggling at the end of the year? Other than Josh Allen, nobody played well on the defense down the stretch last year. Right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think it is, because I was even going to say, like, Darius Williams held up, but he certainly wasn't playing as well as he did, like, in the first half or the first 10 games of the season.
So I'm not going to fault a guy when it was an entire unit, you know, struggling.
Right.
To your point, your Walker Little serenade just made me realize how odd of a pick that is. It's one of the oddest picks in Jaguars' careers that I've covered so far. Because to zero fault of his own, it's a backup entering year four. Not for bad play or anything like that. Legitimately is a talented second rounder who is not starting. It's not because of him. It's a baffling one.
Clearly, they like love the fact, or love to have at least 3 starting caliber tackles on a roster, which like isn't the worst strategy.
But take them where you take Javon Foster, right?
Yeah, not Walker Little at 45th overall. We've got like Cam Robinson and Juwan Taylor were pretty entrenched as starters at that point.
I think the big thing probably is that Walker's not a right tackle. Honestly, he's not a guard either. Yeah, he's just a left tackle, so that does speak to that. All right, so we're in agreement that Devin Lloyd like looks jacked, right? So I'm not. I wasn't crazy.
The other thing I noticed when watching Lloyd was that like I thought the communication looked good, and like it is training camp or OTAs, and so you would expect that kind of like everyone be barking, because like you're probably doing more communication-wise, or more mentally at least, than you are physically out on the fields. But it was still encouraging to see not even just Lloyd, but really the defense in general, I thought has done a pretty formidable job over the first 2 practices that we saw, in terms of like not having a lot of mistakes or a lot of coverage busts, because I kind of would have expected that with like a new defensive staff coming in and kind of teaching their guys new things. And so it's not like they're learning like a whole new defense, because like players probably like already have an understanding of different coverages that they want to run, but they just have to actually kind of relearn it rather than completely learn it for the first time. So it's not like there's a massive learning curve, but at the same time, for just it to be a new defensive coaching staff and then for there to be as little of defensive mistakes that we've seen, I think that's a good sign for Nielsen's defense.
Oh, 100%. And I said this in my observations post yesterday, like, I haven't watched every practice of Devin Lloyd's career because we don't see every single practice, but every practice I've been able to see for almost 3 years now, this is the most confident and aggressive I've seen him in a practice setting. And it's OTAs, dude. He's practicing crazy. Yeah. I'd say after Ingram and Kirk, Devin Lloyd's probably up there with the player who has popped the most during OTAs. And like, he's, at least to me, like, no pads on, obviously. He's the way he's just looked during team drills and stuff has looked like he's treating it like training camp pretty much. Like, yeah. He's been flying around.
Confidence is probably like one of the most important things we can even like judge at this point in the offseason program too. So yeah, it's definitely a good note.
Any Brian Thomas Jr. impressions yesterday? I actually took more away from yesterday's practice with him than I did with any of like the previous like three. I don't know whether it was he was showcased more or whatever, but let's hear it.
I was just going to say, I keep thinking back to Ridley last year, and Calvin Ridley looked so good against air, and it was incredible. And then, like, he did have to knock a decent amount of rust off since he was out of the league for almost 2 years. But, like, it was just a lot different once they put the pads on. Not that the pads slowed him down, but, like, once he was actually having to face press coverages or, like, just, like, more physical coverages from the defense, he wasn't as impressive. And so Brian Thomas has been really impressive on air this offseason, but I'm just kind of saving my breath until I see it when the pads come on and he's actually like truly having to beat opposing cornerbacks.
No, and that's honestly completely fair. I guess yesterday I saw more maybe emphasis on how his catch radius and length can potentially help them.
I kind of thought that's where you were heading. And I think that's a fair point.
But you also owned me, so fair.
I didn't mean to. Yeah, I didn't mean
fair point to you as well, sir.
I didn't mean
to. Fair point to you as well. trying to think what else. Cam Little hit like a 52-yarder, I think.
Yeah, it seemed like it would have been good from 60.
Yeah. It's
funny because you look at Riley Patterson, you're like, obviously, he's a kicker, so he's just like this small, young guy, and it's like he doesn't seem like he belongs. But then you scan your eyes a couple feet in the other direction to Cam Little, and you're like, oh, he's like in a class of his own in terms of just looking like he's like a coach's son out there. No offense, but like he had a 60-yard field goal. He's been playing well, but it's still funny to see.
Yeah, that's like the clearest, obviously, position battle on the team. Entering training camp, the way Doug made it sound like it was like no real movement will be made during OTAs, so they're both getting the same amount of reps and stuff like that. Obviously, one can look better than the other, but I wouldn't expect them to start to separate from each other until during training camp. I'd imagine they both get a chance in the preseason. You know, obviously, yeah. Little is the favorite because you used a pick in him, but like it's a year that they need to win and make the playoffs. I don't think that they'll be heartbroken if Riley Patterson just performs better and they have to cut a 6-round pick and try to put him on the practice squad. So I expect Little to win it, but I think the competition will be legit, at least in training camp. But both have looked, you know, solid.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen, what, like 3 or 4 kicks each practice?
That adds up.
Logan Cook was looking pretty good yesterday. They were doing some kind of drill of, like, letting the ball bounce on punts and then like downing it immediately or getting on it immediately. I feel like I saw him kicking more balls than anyone else, and he still got it.
Apparently in the division of football me and Pops are coaching in this year, we have to actually punt now. In the last ones, when it was fourth down, you can just say you're punting. And we'll place the ball like automatically, like a certain amount of yards.
Like 20
yards. I guess in this one, we actually have to punt.
Oh, man. I wonder if there's going to be any punt blocks. That'd be kind of funny.
That's going to be fake punt right every time, my friend.
Yeah, that's fair. It'll be fun to hold like punts and tryouts with the kids though, and see who's got the best leg.
I disagree.
Sounds fun from my perspective.
Yeah, good point. All right. Anything else from OTAs that we're missing? Like I said, you can't say anything about the trench guys, at least at this point, in my opinion. We can't say anything about how they're lining up, so for media guidelines. So we'd have a lot to go in about that, but you know, I'm not willing to lose my access until we get a few more subscribers. Mm-hmm. Then we can talk.
I would say Mac Jones is another guy I was thinking on a similar wavelength as Brian Thomas, where I'm excited to see what happens when like there's actually contact in the practices, because he's continued to look like kind of like a pro and a lot smoother and a lot of a better operator than I was kind of expecting. And so like he's looked sharp out there. And so I think that one of, if not his biggest weaknesses in his game, is just like the ability to play under pressure. And so, yeah, I'm interested to see whether he continues to have an impressive offseason or if that kind of fades a little bit once the pads come on. And then the only other thing I was going to say is that ETN and Roy Robertson-Harris weren't at practice yesterday. And I don't think ETN is anything to worry about. I think he missed a fight. Is that right?
Yeah, travel issues, something.
Yeah, something so like that's nothing to worry about. But then Roy Robertson-Harris has had a boot on in his right leg. And Peterson didn't say anything about it before practice. And so that's definitely something to monitor.
We'll ask him about it in 2 weeks.
Yeah. We were saying yesterday, like, it's kind of brutal that Peterson talks before practice, because he warned people that Cam Robinson was going to be there, who isn't there because of, he's spending time with his new child. But
congratulations to the Robinsons.
Congratulations to the Robinsons. But no mention of ETN, which is fair. But then no mention of, like, Roy, who's in a boot, is wild. Oh, well, whatever.
That's the big leagues, buddy.
Yeah, we're definitely playing by their rules.
Yeah. I guess the last thing I would say is another guy who – he's popped now in both OTAs. I think he has 4 pass breakups and team drills through 2 OTAs. You know who it is?
4 pass breakups? Jerrion Jones.
Yes, sir. He's another guy who's been everywhere, dude. Like, again, we can't say what team they're with, where they're lining up, etc. But he had 2 pass breakups in the first OTA and team drills, and he had 2 more yesterday. Like, he's
a handful of like kind of forcing non-passes, like where he has tight enough coverage that like quarterback had to move on in his progression. So he's like, it's not like it's just been 1 or 2 splash plays. He's had a really well put together camp.
Yeah, like, and again, it's on air, but he's definitely a guy who I think my opinion of him is trending upward, you know, heading into training camp and whatnot. All right, we're gonna break real quick and then we're gonna be back, talk about a few more things. Be right back. I'm supposed to tell you. I forgot I'm supposed to tell you.
You do the intro after the break.
That's on me. Okay, we're actually recording in the morning for the first time in months. It's throwing me off, man.
Yeah, no, it's definitely throwing me off too.
There's a King of the Hill episode where Bobby becomes a paper boy, and long story, like, the paper boys like run out all the like 50-year-old cigarette smokers who deliver papers and stuff in the town, and he tries to get them back at the end. He's like, I've gotten up at 4:30 for the last 3 weeks, and I've seen like dew on the grass, birds in the air, things I never want to see again. That's how I feel about the morning episode, but it's good for scheduling, and we love you guys. So, all right, few semi notable things.
Semi is a strong word.
It is a strong word, but it's just from the press conferences yesterday, there wasn't a ton. Obviously, the biggest part of the press conference was Doug Peterson talking about the Brandon McManus allegations from ESPN. ESPN's Michael DeRocco has done an excellent job reporting on that. I highly recommend going and reading really how he's detailed the complaint. Peterson's comments yesterday on it was, you know, he was asked why McManus was released. I kind of wanted to get up and stand on my chair after like the third time of saying somebody saying he's been released because his contract expired technically. Nonetheless, he said he wasn't brought back. He talked about performance and age and contract, and he said the ESPN article was the first he had heard of it. So that's obviously not going to be the last that we hear about the situation. So we'll see more on it moving forward. Other than that, the biggest things they talked about, I don't know. I thought press was maybe more. He normally does a good job of feeding you like the company line, you know, like fodder. But I don't know. I thought he was maybe a little forthcoming yesterday when he talked about Tank Bigsby and Mia O'Brien asked him, you know, outright, like, do you regret how you utilized Tank Bigsby last year? And obviously, nobody was thinking when the Jags lost their five of the last six games that. You know, not playing Tank, you know, was the reason. And Press made a good point. He was like, there's a lot that we could have done better last year, a.k.a. I probably regret a lot about last year.
Yeah, he said it like a lot about like a different player utilizations too, not just Tank.
Yeah, so Tank's including him. But he didn't know. He said, I thought it was interesting. The second thing he said, the first thing was he said he thinks – Tank could have maybe provided some things that they just didn't give him the opportunities to do, which is fair. They basically they went like a two and a half month stretch where they just didn't let him see the field, which nobody was criticizing them for it at the time because of the unlucky turnovers he got. But just in terms of player development, like you're obviously not, you know, getting anywhere with that. So that's fair. And secondly, he said sometimes, you know, they gave Travis work on some stuff where it could have just it seemed like moments, like maybe late. He didn't say this. He said concepts. But to me, I read it as like moments and games and stuff where ETN maybe didn't need to be in, you know? Like you can stand to at least see what Tank can do. And they didn't really do that. You know, like I said, they went like a 2.5 month where I think Josh Peterson outsnapped in one game. So it was what it was with him last year. But I thought Press was at least forthcoming to a degree to note, like, yeah, probably messed up on that one.
Yeah, I think it was probably just that, like, they were like, we really cannot afford any more turnovers because I'm not sure where they ranked in terms of turnovers last year, but I think it was probably bottom five. And so at one point in the season, like, turnovers were just really killing them, and they were kind of like the Jags were beating themselves more than other teams were beating them. And so, yeah, just clearly there was a huge trust issue in that, like, they weren't even letting him go onto the field for, like, those non-important reps that you were mentioning. Just because they were had so much fear that like something bad was going to happen, and like it's not even really Tank's fault. We've talked about how unlucky he got with like all the different turnovers, and like the best way to kind of fix that is to get him into the game more and get him more reps and more confidence, and like have him actually play like an NFL player. But yeah, the only other thing he said about Tank was that he's in a good headspace, which like maybe he was just saying that because he was at the podium, but. If it's true, then it's a big thing. Because we were just talking about how big of a deal confidence is, and like, I don't really have anything to say about Tank's confidence during the past two practices that we've seen. But if he actually is a lot more confident right now than he was during the season last year, then that would make a big effect.
Yeah, like you said, they couldn't afford more turnovers. I get it from both perspectives, I guess I would say. Like Tank was just like a small part of the Jaguar season, and he just the way the season went, his rookie year kind of got screwed, you know. Like he definitely was a victim, I think, of how the year went. And yeah, it can't excuse turnovers, but again, I thought a lot of those were unlucky. And I'm not saying like he'll have a redemption year or whatever. I'm not making any proclamations, but I do think he'll at least get more opportunities this year, because last year it was just like the perfect storm of they were like can't. And they were fourth in turnovers last year with 32, almost two turnovers a game. The only teams above them were the Jets, the Vikings, and the Cleveland Browns.
I bet if Lawrence and Kirk even didn't get injured in that Monday Night Football game against the Bengals in week 13, I want to say, and they had like closed the season out pretty strongly and convincingly made the playoffs, I feel like Tank could have ended up having like a pretty nice last month of the season and like a good enough last month for people to say, okay, the beginning of the season was obviously rough, but he's actually building some momentum going into year two. And so he never really got a chance to build that momentum. And so that's what the next month or two is going to look like now.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. That's a great word, momentum.
Momentum. It's real. Yeah. I will say, it even is. Though we've established our pro analytics, pro numbers, we say analytics on this podcast, but the analytics will say momentum isn't real. I think momentum is real.
I played my first game in the Madden Pals League. It's final season for this version. Played my first one last night.
The one with like Justice and Chuck in them?
Yeah. I'm like six seasons behind everybody else, so they all have like X factors. And I'm taking a team from scratch. And we're like 82 overall, but I played somebody else last night. Momentum was very real. I choked because I forgot how to count, more or less, and lost with like 8 seconds left because it just momentum. I very much felt it. it was brutal. The other thing about Tank, I think that was interesting, was Doug brought up kick returning when talking about
I missed that.
He did. I
was surprised because he actually had a couple of returns last year. Like after Agnew went down, Parker Washington like wasn't doing as well as I think they were hoping on kickoff returns specifically. And so Tank got a couple opportunities last year.
That's what he said.
I missed him saying that. That's funny though.
Yeah.
Like I considered it for this year with the new rule changes though.
Yeah. Like Devin Duvernay and Keelan Robinson, I think will definitely be their two guys, but I don't know. Maybe you see Tank in the mix there some. Did I say on this podcast when the rule came out, maybe Tank there? Or did I say it out loud to you ever? Sure.
Sure.
Sure. I didn't imagine it. I said it out loud. And it was guffawed at. I don't know if it was on the podcast or in person. I know
it doesn't really ring a bell to me, but I'll give it to you. It's sure. Okay.
You're the bane of my existence. All right. Moving forward. Other, I guess, notable things. Press was asked if he cared about who's calling plays. He said no. He only cares to win, etc. Obviously, yes, Presley does care who called plays. He obviously has to say no. But the thing about that that's interesting to me is it's still we're almost in June. And if Press was calling plays, he would have been like, no, it doesn't bother me, but I'm calling plays. You know, like, why do you ask? So we still don't know the Jaguars play caller. But every time they get asked about it and they don't answer, I continue to think, like, get nudged more and more towards it'll be Doug.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Because, if they were just keeping it the same way, then Doug
Well, wouldn't you just – yeah. And
like, it's Presto, okay? Damn.
Exactly. And I do think – I'm not going to say Doug has paid more attention to the offense than he has in the past, but I'll say that seeing Nielsen's presence, it definitely does feel like the defense can kind of be – like, right? Like, just seeing how he operates and how the defense has operated through the first couple practices, that – if you're Doug, you can kind of trust that, all right, this guy's got it. I can focus on my side.
Yeah. Right? After last season, Doug was talking a little bit about – I feel like it was when he was asked about play calling too. He was like, oh, there was like certain things that came up during the season and that I kind of had to shift my attention to. So he was basically saying that like he had to pay more attention to the defense and kind of like
– didn't work.
And like actually like, parent them a little bit. And so now that – yeah, now that he doesn't have to parent them anymore, though, because Nielsen is there, maybe he can go back to parenting the offense more. And so even if, like, surprisingly, Press does call plays again, which I agree with you, I think it's trending in the direction that it's going to be Doug. Like, I feel like Doug will at least still be more involved, which he kind of has to be since they lost who was it this year? It was Jim Bob Cooter last year, right? And then they lost to Lou Holtz.
And then Nichols.
Nichols?
Lou Holtz?
it's early, John. We've established this.
That wasn't a bit. That was a genuine guess.
As I said, I do. Nick Holtz.
Nick Holtz. He's not related to him. There's no relationship.
I don't know what I'm thinking. But they've lost two not insignificant offensive coaches in the past two off seasons and haven't replaced them. Or maybe they found a replacement last year. No.
Yeah.
So
they replaced Jim Bob. They haven't replaced They haven't replaced one of the best coaches in Notre Dame history yet.
But I think Jim Bob was actually like low key a pretty big loss. And then yeah, so now that position just isn't filled at all. Which is
Jim Bob was a bigger loss. Jim Bob was a bigger loss. At least in my understanding of the importance of at least what he brought to the table as like a different voice. Jim Bob was a bigger loss, and I think Holtz is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
So, well, I guess the only other things, quick hitters, NFL Network reporters came out with yesterday that, you know, the NFLPA, et cetera, looking to restructure the NFL offseason. Training camp would start mid-June, away with OTAs. I would absolutely hate that.
Yeah, that would be a bummer.
It's not my body on the line, and my opinion shouldn't matter, but this is at least a space where I can express my opinion.
For sure. Going
to a training camp practice in June, I would bang my head against the wall, my friend. But as a player, I get why, you know, obviously, like just ramp it up and stuff. But I feel like most NFL operations people, again, not the people putting the bodies on the lines. I think players should have the highest like voice in how these things should be done because they're the guys, you know, doing it. Players and coaches, obviously. But I think like NFL operations people, like front office people, commissioner's office, etc. Like that's like a little nice 4 to 5, 6 week summer break normally in the NFL calendar. That's like the only time like NFL people can really kick back, and
yeah,
you would just basically be taking that away completely.
It's during the summer too, which is huge for people that have families. It looks because the summer is when kids have off, and it's generally the easiest time to travel and like the best time to vacation. So it's tough.
Nope. Can't go to Disney, buddy. We can't go to rookie mini camp.
What are we doing? Yeah, I don't have to add other than I hope it doesn't happen, but I'm expecting it to happen. Just like moving adding an extra regular season game to the schedule. Like I don't want it to happen, but I'm expecting it.
It's gonna happen.
Yeah.
Doug, I think actually a pretty good answer on it. I'll find it so I don't misquote him, but I do think we're gonna move to 18 games eventually and 2 preseason games. I know Goodell has openly said he wants to get rid of the preseason. Completely. Let's see what he said.
That's how you fill out your roster is the preseason. I know that it's annoying to not see like you like your favorite star players start and finish each preseason game, but like they really matter for the rest of the depth chart and the rest of the roster. So it'd be that would just be such a blow to all of the like fringe roster guys who are like competing for a spot. It would just make their jobs so much harder.
Yeah, I agree. Going to Doug's answer, I was actually wrong, thinking maybe players would like that June thing. Doug said players probably wouldn't like training camp being extended as long enough as it is. And then he said, look, anything that we do, if it helps the game, it helps better the game, and it's moving the game forward, I'm all for that. And he got asked, does an 18-game schedule move forward? And after smirking for a good, 3 to 4 seconds.
Several seconds.
Yeah, said for the fans. And then the question was for the players. And he says more exposure, more opportunities, there's more money. So, yeah, I think that's moving it forward. I think there'll be a lot of dialogue around that, but definitely moving in the right direction. More or less saying, yeah, 18 games isn't for the players, but everybody makes more money off it, which is, I think he said it in the only way an NFL coach can say it without one of Goodell's gargoyles.
He's at least nice, and like anyone who like watched it rather than just like reading the quote online could definitely tell like the kind of like hint of sarcasm or whatever that he had, and that what he was saying wasn't exactly what he meant necessarily. Yeah, being a head coach though is that you have to give those answers.
I know fans don't think that the team gets grilled hard enough. I'd imagine 30 NFL fan bases say their beat doesn't grill their team hard enough. The Jets fan base is probably the one who's like, all right, y'all take it easy a little bit. Every other team, including the Jaguars fan base, thinks that their media is too soft on the team. I don't know, man. Doug gets peppered with some questions, man. Yeah, he got peppered some yesterday. And then the 18, like the schedule one, like he was getting put on the spot. And he's been put on the spot before. I mean, somebody asked him last year if Trevor was seeing things out there. He gets put on the spot.
I love his answers in regards to Trevor, because usually he's like, he doesn't think that Trevor is like the best quarterback in the world, but like he knows that Trevor is like franchise quarterback material. And so I feel like he just kind of like rolls his eyes anytime he gets a negative question about Trevor.
Yeah. To him, Trevor is like in like day four of their like plan. You know,
yeah.
That's the way it seems. Like he always goes back to how young he is, etc. So. All right, Gus. And anything else? Anything else catch your eye?
No. I was like, we got to talk about Devin Lloyd. That was really the main takeaway that I had. That was the only thing.
I need you to post that ASAP so I can be vindicated.
Will do. All right, send me this link ASAP.
All right. Well, we'll see. All right. With that said, thank you guys for joining the Jaguar Report podcast for the biggest episode we've ever had, 102. We'll be back next week for the next biggest episode. It's 3 more than 100. I'm John Shipley, my friend and co-host, Gus Logue, close friend of former Jaguars passing game coordinator Lou Holtz. Gus, you got anything else for us? I'm not going to let you live that down. Lou Holtz, what the hell?
I'm sticking with my morning excuse, but no, that was bad.
I want to study you.
I said I was in bed about 6 minutes before this podcast. I'm definitely feeling foggy, but it's all right.
That's fair.
No, I was going to say something. I lost it. Let's just get out of here.
That's great, man. That's the Jaguar Report podcast for you.
All right, what's the countdown? We got 300 remaining. 300 to go.
298.
There we go.
Yeah, I know you're counting. You put a countdown on it. I would have said
it's a funny way to go about it now.
I would have said I can't put a number on it. I enjoy spending time with my friend.
I saw you yesterday. It's not like this is the only time we hang out.
I would have said like 500. it was good seeing you. All right. With that said, thank you guys for joining the Jaguar Report podcast. We'll be back next Wednesday. Talk about the next Jaguars OTA practice. I will say there's been something different to take away from each one. So,
I mean, we got to 45 minutes today.
Yeah, there we go. Only about half of that was rambling. So,
it's usually about half anyway.
Fair enough. Thank you guys for joining us for episode 102. Please like us, subscribe to us, give us reviews on all of your platforms out there. Apple, Spotify. Please subscribe to us on YouTube at the Jaguar Report channel. We're almost to our goal of 500. We're less than 10 subscribers away. So you can be lucky 500 and get absolutely nothing out of it, but bring to absolute morons some slight dopamine.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, really. For Twitter, too. Like, that's why I log on.
Yep, exactly. So thank you guys for joining us, and we'll be back next week.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save. Like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.